Have you heard that Kaiser Permanente School of Medicine is enrolling its first class? Not only that, but it's reimagining medical education with a revolutionary approach, intertwining clinical and classroom-based experience throughout the 4 years, no tuition for the first 5 years, minimal use of lectures, and a spiral case-based curriculum. Wait a second, what is a spiral case-based curriculum? Let's find out in this interview with KP's Associate Dean of Admissions. Welcome to the 307th episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result, you get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in," and not only in, but in at the best program for you. Before we meet our guest today, I want to mention that the featured resource for today's podcast is Accepted's Admissions Consulting, which is 10% off today and tomorrow. Actually, not just the consulting, any of our services, any of our med school services. This is our best special of the year, and it's happening now. To save big on guidance for your all-important medical school applications, whether you want as little as 1 hour or as much as a comprehensive package, go to accepted.com/medical/services, choose the service that's right for you, enter start now in the coupon code field in our shopping cart, and save big. Our guest today is Dr. Lyndia Willis-Jacobo, Associate Dean for Admissions at the Kaiser Permanente School of Medicine, which will welcome its first class in the summer of 2020. While the KP School of Medicine may be new, Dr. Willis-Jacobo is not at all new to the field of med school admissions. She earned her MD at UCSD and served there as a professor of pediatrics from 1992 to 2019. For 22 of those years, she was also the Assistant Dean for Diversity and Community Partnerships and Director of the Program in Medical Education Health Equity. Hello, Dr. Willis-Jacobo. Welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Well, many thanks, Linda. That was a very kind introduction.
You're most welcome. It was a completely true introduction. Kaiser Permanente is one of the country's leading not-for-profit health plans with over 12 million members and almost 23,000 member doctors. Why is it going into the medical education business?
I think that's a great question, Linda. And I guess the way that I would start by responding to that is precisely the way you've introduced it. I think that having sort of led the field in terms of healthcare delivery and having this exceptional healthcare delivery model, Kaiser Permanente has been in the business of training doctors for quite some time. And most of that training has happened after these young physicians finished medical school. So I do think that it just seems like the next best step, and certainly a step that in no way that makes a lot of sense, I should say. I think that the concept of being able to introduce these models a lot earlier in medical education seemed, again, essential for an organization and an integrated healthcare system such as Kaiser's.
So what models do you feel were lacking in medical education previously, or what are you trying to add to the field? I mean, what need is there that you feel is missing?
Right. And I think that, again, another really great question. And for all of us who are now building this school from the ground up, I think that's been a question that we have continuously asked ourselves, you know, what is missing from the current model? And I think, you know, I'm a pediatrician prior to coming in as the admissions dean. I had a pretty active clinical practice. And though we do try to share models with our medical students and other trainees that make sense, I think there's so much about the way in which healthcare delivery is structured that isn't necessarily, it's not accessible, right, to every patient who comes into the door. And I think when we speak about access, that's a pretty broad term. So I'll define what I'm speaking about a little bit better. I think the current model by which we practice medicine is such that a patient arrives in the clinic. In my case, as a pediatrician, I see kids with parents, and I may have 15 to 20 minutes to see those patients, and I'm trying to address the immediate need of the patient. But, you know, there's then that environment, that community that the patient leaves our clinic walls and goes into. So I think we're always challenged to think about how to better integrate sort of population health and thinking about a patient or family, the community's built environment. I think that really thinking beyond that therapeutic relationship in the clinic setting or in the hospital setting, and really challenging ourselves and reimagining how we are able to better integrate how a patient, sort of engages in their built environment. And that's a lot of what we are trying to develop with the way that we have structured our curriculum, including students engaging in clinical practice a lot earlier than one may see at many medical schools throughout the country, certainly from year one, within the first few weeks of arrival to our medical school.
You know, it's very interesting that you mentioned this. I was talking to a friend the other day, and mm-hmm. she was quite frustrated because she has an elderly father.
Right.
The father, and she took the father to a specific physician, a specialist, about a particular issue mm-hmm. that the father was dealing with. And the
right.
and the physician did not want to hear at all that the man had lost right. a lot of weight, is basically right. disengaged, and
right.
you know, doesn't seem interested in much of anything. It was like she was not looking at the larger person. That was just
right. Odd. Right. Exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I think for us, I mean, those are the stories we hear every day. And I think from our perspective, utilizing the best evidence that's out there in terms of, you know, medical education theory, it's really addressing it at that fundamental level.
All right. Now, you and your team have the really mm-hmm. exciting opportunity to develop a curriculum mm-hmm. that reflects right. KP's priorities and frustrations mm-hmm. with current medical education. Mm-hmm. Can Absolutely. You give us an overview of the Kaiser Medical School curriculum?
Sure, happy to do that. So I'll just start with saying that some of our curricular highlights, the okay. way that we're thinking about this is through a continuum. I think folks may have seen that we're talking about a spiral case-based curriculum. So essentially, we are not going to be, teaching our students utilizing, a lecture format. All learning will happen in small teams. So we are matriculating 48 students in 2020. And okay. Those 48 students will be divided into groups of eight, so cohorts of eight. So all of the teaching and learning will be happening typically with two faculty preceptors who will be overseeing small groups of eight students. It's going to be a flipped classroom model. It will be done a lot of team-based learning. Our students will be engaging with a primary care physician from year one. So going out and essentially putting to practice what they are learning every single day in that flipped classroom setting. And so I think that makes it extraordinarily unique. Other features that I think are unique is we're not going to be teaching anatomy using cadavers. We have an anatomy resource center. We will be availing ourselves of, technology. I think that's one of the areas that is a definite strength here at our institution. We will be teaching it by way of augmented and virtual reality using wow. what's called plastinated, plastinated organs. So not that these are plastic, but that they're fixed with a certain substance that really allows, if you're looking at the heart, for example, for that particular week, you can see all of the sort of beautiful aspects of that heart, perhaps even better than one would if you were the person dissecting the heart. And again, by virtue of utilizing virtual and augmented reality, really having a full interaction, not just with organ systems, but with the entire body.
Wow. That's all I can say. So there's no dissection and there's not going to be any dissection at KP?
There will be no actual dissections at KP. Students will be doing quite a bit with goggles so that, they will actually be engaging, right, with the cadaver, uh-huh. again, which will be a plastinated cadaver.
Really?
And so it's going to be a pretty nice experience for the students.
And obviously you've worked with real people. You've worked with cadavers
because yes,
you were
yes.
educated when you were educated.
Yeah.
And how mm-hmm. does this compare?
I think that's a great question. And it really made me reflect back 30 years back. I went to medical school in 1988. And, you know, there is certainly a benefit to cadaver dissections. I will tell you that I still remember as if it, was yesterday, my cadaver. I remembered there's an emotional aspect, right, to someone donating their bodies for us, me,
what was
to learn
life?
On. So, right, exactly. Yeah. And so there is definitely, I think, that connection. But if I sort of rewind back and think about how I learned anatomy, and the dissection piece was certainly an important aspect. But I will tell you that there were times when it depends really on how nimble and how good you are as someone dissecting, right? There were times I couldn't differentiate an artery from a vein, from a nerve. And so I think there was a bit of a challenge learning it. I will also say that many of our exams, in addition to being handwritten exams, this was in 1988, we had tag exams, right? So our instructor would put tags on different organ systems. They would put tags on vessels and nerves. And I'm not entirely sure I was always able to identify what I was looking at. So I would argue that this is truly a wonderful way to really look at anatomical structures. And okay. So, you know, I will also say, though, that, you know, there are students, as they are making decisions about schools, will need to make that decision for themselves, too, in terms right. of whether that's an approach that they feel they can learn with.
This should be very interesting. So one of the aspects, one of the unique and distinctive aspects is, I guess, this very high tech, plastinated,
right.
you know, approach to learning anatomy.
Right.
What are some other aspects of the Kaiser Permanente
right.
program?
Right. So I think there are one of the ones that I think we're most excited about is our wellness curriculum. I think when you look across the country, as we're seeing an increase in burnout, not just in medical right. students, but also in physicians, right? The very people who will be teaching our students. We've thought that this was a unique opportunity to make wellness part of the curriculum. I think many institutions are, there's significant variability in how robust wellness programs are. And I will say that the majority of wellness programs at medical schools are more extracurricular. And we felt that it was an opportunity to place these breaks in the students' curriculum across the 4 years that they're with us and really have them engage with a coach. There will be a wellness coach, a reach coach, who will be working with students in terms of professional and personal development. And that will happen 4 times throughout the year, so at the end of every quarter. And that's really an opportunity for our students to work on their personal identity, or their professional identity, I should say. It, you know, I reflect back again 30 years when I went to med school, and the way that it happened is the first 2 years you were in a classroom, 8 to 5, very basic science oriented. And then one day you were handed a white coat, a stethoscope, and you got to be a clinical medical student, right? And there was a bit of an artificiality to that model. So we are incredibly excited to be able to do that very intentional work with our medical students and provide the time, right? Not just say to them, go out and be well, but really make it an institutional priority, a curricular priority.
And give them a foundation for wellness really for their entire
career. Right, to practice throughout. I think that's
right.
exactly right. And that's right. the idea, right? It's the institute or those values very early.
Now, one of the things that struck me, I have here your
right, that mock-up.
Right? I looked at that beforehand, right? That
right.
mock-up, which
mm-hmm.
kind of lays it out.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that struck me about the curriculum is it appeared to me that the KP student will have clinical exposure throughout the 4 years and also
right.
didactic instruction throughout the 4 years. Am I correct? Right. I mean, it may not be lecture-based. It may not be lecture-based didactic in that sense, absolutely. But it'll be classroom. There'll be classes. It'll be
that is exactly correct. So I think one of the things you see in the curriculum is we have three pillars or departments. We have the biomedical science. We have the clinical science, and we have health system science. So when you look across the 4 years, you are right in that in the first year, there's a lot of flipped classroom didactic that's happening in the mornings with a lot of independent time in the afternoons. As you progress out through the second year, we then do a lot of the more intensive core clinical clerkships, as we call them. Now, those experiences for our students at KP School of Medicine will happen in the second year of medical school. At most medical schools throughout the country, those very intense core clinical experiences happen in the third year. You will note that in years 3 and 4 then, in addition to having opportunities to do, study abroad, doing clinical experiences in various parts of the country and the world, the students will also continue to be engaged in terms of with their small groups. There will still be some help system science didactic types of engagement that the students will continue to be involved with.
Okay. Now you mentioned the term spiral case-bound curriculum.
Right.
And I had noted that in my preparation.
Right.
And
right.
The question is, what is spiral case-based curriculum?
Right. Spiral case-based curriculum. That is a great question. And when I think about a spiral, I think about spiraling down this way. Think about it this way. So the students start basic. Yeah, going up.
Okay.
They start at a very basic level. We know that the 48 students entering will enter our space at different levels, right, of mastery in a lot of our biomedical sciences, for example. And what a spiral curriculum does is it starts very basic, right? And the same topics continue to be reintroduced in a spiral developmental manner, so that by the time the student is a graduating medical student and is moving from medical school to residency, they have achieved a certain level of mastery or competence in different areas that will be carved out. So, you know, we think about it, and this is all, by the way, borne out in, it's evidence-based, in adult learning theory, right? We know that adults, certainly we all learn information a little bit better when we're engaging with it repeatedly. But we also learn it better when we are able to share with each other, and we are actually engaging with material in a much more hands-on, interactive, team-based way. And so it really was with knowing all of that, or having all of that evidence in mind, that this particular case-based, again, spiraling to a level of mastery comes into play.
Okay, that's fascinating. And mm-hmm. and I guess the key point is to think of it going up as opposed to going down.
Right. Exactly. And,
and the case-based part of it.
So the case-based part of it, I think, is perhaps one of the more exciting parts of it, because having three pillars or three departments, biomedical sciences, clinical sciences, and the health system science, what our team is doing, what the department chairs and faculty involved at all three levels are doing, is really coming together and developing cases whereby every aspect of those pillars will be wrapped into a case vignette, right? And again, we know that our students, I think physicians in general, we learn best when we have information to anchor on to a real scenario, you know, a 65-year-old with chest pain, and being able to integrate different pieces from every single pillar is important.
Fascinating. And what about now the the biomedical sciences, the clinical, that's pretty common across medical schools. What about the health systems part of it?
I think that's a great question. And health system science is, I think, if you looked across the 154 schools, you are not necessarily, you will see features of a health system science pillar or department integrated into different aspects of medical schools. But I think that we had a unique opportunity to get an amazing health system science chair, Dr. Paul Chung, who is an expert in the field, whereby students will be learning alongside him issues of disparities of health policy, how to incorporate the built environment, structural determinants of health. So I think, one of the more exciting and kind of unique features of how the curriculum is being built.
And of course, it's a natural for Kaiser Permanente.
It's very natural for Kaiser Permanente. I think that's exactly right. Absolutely.
Now, the KP Medical School requires a scholarly project at some point in the 4 years mm-hmm. of medical school. What do you anticipate that will be? Will it be bench research? Will it be more clinical or community oriented, or kind of what do you think it's going to be?
Great question. And first and foremost, I think, again, you know, just looking at what our students will have the opportunity to be engaged in, it can really be, the way we're thinking about it, any of the above. So, for example, our students can go out to City of Hope and do more bench-like research. Our students can walk down to Caltech and have be engaged in research at that level with a faculty mentor. And of course, they can be here at KP looking at any number of aspects in this amazing integrated health care system. So, and they can also do literature reviews, right, on a topic of interest or something that they, you know, a burning question that they've always had. So the purpose behind the scholarly project is really to continue to nurture that, the importance of inquiry, right? As doctors, I think we need to continue to be inquisitive and curious about any number of issues. And so for us, it's a matter of getting the students engaged in sort of the understanding the importance of inquiry early.
Okay. Now, I want to just tell listeners that there's a lot more that's absolutely fascinating about the Kaiser approach and curriculum, but I want to turn to the admissions as part of it. So,
sure, absolutely.
We've piqued listeners' curiosity with our mm-hmm. brief discussion and your excellent overview.
Sure.
But I want to mm-hmm. turn to admission. So let me just emphasize again that I could ask more questions, but I don't want to impose on Dr. Willie Jacobo and more than I already am. And I want to move on to the admissions part.
Right. Absolutely. Okay.
What is distinctive about the KP approach to medical school admissions?
It's a wonderful question. And it's certainly an area I'm thinking about every single day. You know, we will be utilizing what we call, and actually it's directly from the WMC, which is the Association for American Medical Colleges, this approach known as holistic review. And what that allows us to do as a school is really look at every applicant as an individual and ensure that we're broadening the lens, right, through which we see each applicant. So for example, I think at every medical school, students need to provide us with transcripts. We look at GPAs, and they certainly need to provide us with their MCAT scores. And while that is part of the story, and it helps us to determine a little bit who has the likelihood to succeed in medical school, it by no means tells us the whole story. We also have to think about admissions from an equity perspective or an equitable perspective, in that we are also cognizant that, you know, I use this word a fair amount in the admission space, that every person's social capital is a little bit different. And so I think it is looking at all aspects of our applicant. We're going to ensure one of the premises of holistic review is that it needs to be mission driven. So ensuring that we are capturing students who really are a good fit for the mission of the school. And we cannot ignore that piece at any throughout any aspect of our very lengthy admissions process.
Okay, so you're looking for people who identify with the KP mission. You're looking for people
Absolutely.
Who are going to do well in medical school academically.
Absolutely.
So you want
right.
to admit people who can't do the work.
Absolutely.
And is there anything else, or have I pretty much summarized it?
I think you've summarized it, but if I could get a little bit more
sure.
granular in terms of what we mean when we talk about, a good fit for KP School of Medicine. I've had the amazing opportunity to be out on the road speaking to lots and lots of pre-med students, which is one of the more fun aspects of my work. But when we talk about a good fit for KP, we're looking for students, first and foremost, who are exceptional critical thinkers. I think that okay. having the type of curriculum that we're developing will require students to be able to think a bit more broadly than one would do if one is sitting passively getting lectures, spoken to them. So ensuring that our students have that critical thinking to them. But beyond that, we're also looking for students who are deeply passionate and compassionate, especially in terms of delivery of health and ensuring that they are reaching all communities and patients. So having that level of deep passion and compassion and commitment to that, but also students who have sort of demonstrated humility, right? Students who have the readiness to be leaders and advocates. So I guess in summary, we're kind of looking for change agents, students who really want to journey on with us to not just identify the many issues that exist within the healthcare system, right? But to really creatively think about how to solve those. So we feel that for students who are ready to train and then make those changes, not just within KP, but we know that, again, we've said this a few times, leveraging just truly an amazing, right, integrated healthcare system and being able to take that model anywhere those students choose to do their residency training and beyond. So I hope that sort of better articulates what I mean by a fit.
I think that was great. Thank you. My next question, you may have already answered. I think it's, I'm going to pose it anyway, just in case there's something you want to add, but your previous answer was excellent. Now, KP is offering no tuition for its first five classes.
Yeah.
And your initial class is very small. It's going to be 48 students.
That is correct.
Competition is going to be extremely intense.
Absolutely.
And so my question was going to be, how are you going to distinguish the qualified from the
right.
almost qualified? Because you're going to have many yes. more qualified people
right.
than you possibly.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that's exactly right. And this is an area that every school in the country will struggle with. And,
yes.
With having only 48 seats, what we always know in the admission space that we have way more qualified applicants than we are able to offer spots to. So I'll just start by saying that. But so much of selecting out, and it is going to be a very selective process. I'm grateful that I don't do this by myself, right? I will have a group of about 80, right, faculty helping out with
wow.
that. So much of that will begin with training of our faculty in terms of holistic review, in terms of ensuring that, it's mission-based, mission-driven.
Will you have any minimums in terms of MCAT and GPA, like a screening?
We don't. And that's a great question. It's probably one of the more common questions we get from our pre-med students. And we have decided as a new school that it didn't feel right to establish minimums. I think we owe it to students applying to us to read every single application, and that will be done. So we are structuring and building out our admissions process so that every file will get a look. And again, it's going to be highly selective and just really continuously looking back at the mission and ensuring that the students that we are offering interviews to, I think we often forget that, you know, the door opens up at the interview point, right? So we will have folks screening those applications and then making very tough decisions regarding who should be invited in for interviews. And once those interviews are conducted, that's the next phase of do these applicants move forward into the admissions committee space where the final decisions are made. So it's going to be difficult. We do know that it's going to be highly selective. And we also know that we will, without a doubt, have way more qualified applicants in the applicant pool than we are able to make room for.
How many interview invitations do you anticipate giving out? Do you have any thoughts on that yet or not yet?
Great questions. We're beginning the thing. You know, as a new school, we don't have historical data, but it'll be several hundred is what we're thinking. So it's going to depend largely on how many applications we get. So the beauty is that, you know, it's kind of still the unknown, and we will have to make adjustments here and there as the process continues.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
What class size do you ultimately hope to reach? I don't assume you intend to stay at 48 forever.
Yeah, no, I think we have to be at 48 for the first, until the first cohort graduates. You know, that's when we get our, what's called our final accreditation. And once that happens, I would imagine we will steadily increase in size. I do not yet know what our final number will be. Are we doubling? Is it, you know, 96? Is it 100? I don't think that level of detail has yet been worked out.
Right. And right now, if I recall, you can only accept U.S. citizens and permanent residents, correct?
That is correct. Those are the primary categories that, and of course, we are also encouraging our DACA students to apply, but we're not in a position to take on international students. That is correct.
Got it. What is KP's secondary application going to be like?
We are busily in the process of developing that too. So the nice thing about secondary applications is they're really designed to speak to kind of the personality of the school. So really ensuring that we're building out questions that are meeting our mission, vision, values, context, and ensuring that, again, that's going to be a wonderfully rich way for us to tease out, you know, who has an understanding of our school and who we think would really thrive here. Because we, you know, in addition to, you know, the students having the responsibility to ensuring that, you know, they're engaging with schools that they feel are a good match for them, I feel that we too have a responsibility to our students to ensure that if we select you and you choose to matriculate, that we can provide an environment in which you will thrive. So we feel responsible for that.
Isn't that KP's motto?
That's KP's thrive. Motto. Thrive. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
And I also think if most medical schools have missions and they want students that identify with those missions.
But absolutely.
You, I think, in your responses here have really focused on the mission, probably more than most. Again, most do have them, but you focus on it a little bit more than most. And the secondary application is where the student can respond to that focus a little bit more
clearly. Absolutely. 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 And I think when students fill out secondaries, whether it's for KP School of Medicine or other medical schools that, you know, they're thinking about apply or they have applied to, you know, I've done many years of mentoring and advising pre-med students. I always encourage them to really ensure that the mission of those schools is a good fit for them, because I think if it's not, it reflects in the secondary application responses back to us, right? I think once you read through these, it's sometimes clear that the student hasn't necessarily thought out, you know, kind of what the school is all about. So I encourage people to go to the websites all the time and to speak to as many folks as they can.
I frequently tell medical school applicants that on a kind of a 30,000 foot level, the primary application is about fitness for medicine And the secondary application is about fit with a specific school. And the interview also.
I couldn't have stated it better. I think that's exactly right. They're two different things. That's right. Mm-hmm. I fully agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And they're complementary.
And they're complementary. Absolutely. Right. You can't have one without the other. Yeah.
Right. I think that's right. What can applicants invited to interview at KPA expect? Or do you even know yet? I assume you know.
Yeah, no, we do know. So we are utilizing what we've termed a hybrid model. And what that means is that we're doing multiple mini interviews. So lots of, there will be six stations where students have 8 minutes to complete a vignette that they will be presented at the day of the interview. They have 2 minutes to read it. They take notes, then they go in, they meet with the interviewer in a room. They speak for, 8 minutes, and then they move into the next. So think of it, we often talk about this as speed dating, but we also will be utilizing a traditional interview. So it hence a hybrid model. So that's what they should expect. It'll be roughly a half day that, or they will be with us a full day, but we will have morning interviews and afternoon interviews.
Okay.
So, and they now, just get to meet with the leadership team as well.
Okay. So is there an individual interview as well as the multiple MMI?
That is correct. There is a one-on-one traditional interview, which will last about 25 minutes with a faculty member. That is correct.
So you really get to know them.
We really get to know them. And, I think that students should feel good about this because, many schools will have one or the other. I myself am coming in from an institution where we evolved from traditional to all MMIs. So I think if you are someone who's stronger one-on-one with a faculty and perhaps not quite as comfortable with MMIs, it provides a rich opportunity to be viewed in two different ways, right? So,
what are just to move a little bit away for a moment from KP? Uh-huh. What were some of the more common mistakes you saw in MMI interviews when you were at your previous place of employment?
Yeah, UCSD. I mean, it's not a secret. Great question. Yeah, right. So I would argue that the most common one is were students who, and it's hard to know, right? These may have been students who were coached to sort of perform. So students who weren't quite being their authentic selves. When I met and meet with pre-meds and they ask, oh gosh, how do I prep for MMI? It's hard to prep. I try to encourage them to, read up on certain issues. But in general, I think just bringing your authentic self, it's who you are, right? And not necessarily trying to be a persona that they think the interviewer expects, or trying to overread what the interviewer is thinking. And you'll often see students lose their train of thought when that happens, right? The other kind of basic mistakes I see students making is walking into the space without knocking. Sometimes students forget to tell the interviewer who they are. And some of that is due to nerves, right? So I think every student is given one or two not great stations, and the expectation is that that performance or that interview will improve over time. But those are probably the more common ones, some of which are kind of basic, and then others are perhaps even being overly coached in ways that aren't helpful to the applicant.
What if an applicant is interested in a dual degree program? Does KP have the connections? Because it's one of the few schools. It's not the only school. I think the Mayo Clinic also is a very good company in that regard. But it's not associated with a university, right? Like
that's right.
UCLA or USC or UCSD.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, so that's a great question. And the good news is that we have a few dual degree programs. I'll start first with the MD PhD program. And KP has developed a partnership with Caltech, which is quite literally down the street. So we're actually lucky to be in Pasadena, because though we don't have our own home university, we are able to take advantage of the many partnerships. We have a partnership with Loyola Marymount University. They will have a health systems engineering sciences master's that students can complete. They can complete a master in public health at UCLA, and they can also do a master's in healthcare leadership at USC. So I think for any student interested in taking their training beyond the MD degree, there will be opportunity for them to do that again, being really fortunate to be able to leverage these many partnerships.
So maybe in that respect, not being affiliated with one university mm-hmm. allows you to go to right. many different ones.
That's exactly right, and see different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Right. What advice do you have for applicants interested in applying to the inaugural class in this upcoming 2019-2020 application
right.
cycle?
Right. Right. You know, it's interesting. I've been reflecting on that a lot, perhaps because I've been talking to so many pre-meds. And I think I'm going to provide my typical what should I be doing to make myself sort of more marketable or increase my risk of increase my chance of getting in. And frankly, apply early. I know this sounds basic, but apply early. You know, the 18-19 cycle, there were about 53,000 applications to medical school across the nation. We are, with us now having 154 medical schools, you know, the acceptance rate for med school is about 40%, right? So it's not horrendous. But, you know, what I say to applicants is even if you are extraordinarily qualified and you apply in September or October, then for some schools and maybe even for us, sometimes those interview slots fill up pretty quickly. So I think for every applicant, the earlier you are able to apply, and I'm making an assumption that you have the readiness to apply, so ensure that you're speaking to your pre-health advisors, your mentors, review your application with your pre-health advisor, your mentors. Hopefully you've established some at your school. But apply early, because the earlier you have your file reviewed, the earlier you will be invited out to interviews. And I also have this theory that anywhere you interview, you have an opportunity to get into that medical school. So I point out to students that, you know, to take sort of that pre-med journey in small steps, I think it can get incredibly overwhelming when students begin to think, you know, with the end in mind. You know, they're often a year ahead of the process. It's, you know, taken in very small chunks. It's a long, rigorous journey. But, you know, again, try to ensure that you are controlling the aspects of the process that you can. And the only thing a pre-med early in their training can control is perhaps their performance in school, et cetera. But they absolutely can control when they apply. So that's typically the advice that I give to students.
I'm frequently asked, especially later in the cycle, sometimes early in the cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a conversation with a mother this week whose daughter mm-hmm. wants to go straight from college to medical school. She does not want to do a gap year, but she doesn't think she can take her MCAT until, I think, May of her junior year. And mm-hmm, I said, well, mm-hmm. that's okay, but you won't get your score until probably June. No, I think it was, she mm-hmm. can only take it in June. That was it. She can only take it in June following the end of her junior year, which means she won't get the score probably till July. I think it was the end of June. So it was more like July, early August. And I was saying, you know, that's okay. Look, medical schools don't accept applications in August for the sole purpose to reject everybody who applies in August.
Right.
But it's like musical chairs. They've been giving out invitations. She's going to be behind, and there are going to be fewer seats available, interview slots and seats available when it comes time to consider her.
I said,
you know, if she can handle rejection and the possibility of reapplication, and she really, really wants the opportunity to start after college, let her apply, but let her apply with open eyes. And if she can't handle the possibility of rejection, let her take a gap year.
Absolutely.
I don't think that would be advice. But anyways, you know, I think that if somebody applies late in the cycle, they really have to face that reality and weigh up the possibility of rejection worth versus the benefit of going to medical school earlier.
And I think that's right. And the other piece, I wholeheartedly agree with all that you've stated. And the other piece to that is, even if that applicant happens to get interviews at other schools that may be less desirable to her, and if she got into what, so it becomes sort of a guessing game. But I love your perspective about, well, if you can, accept rejection, because based on the timing, chances are there will be some, then, and the other thing I like to ask applicants is, what's that urgency about, right? So I usually like to get a sense of why there's that need to go directly from college to medical school. And, I think to each his own and, or her own. And I think there's significant variability in sort of why people want to take that path.
Do you have an opinion about a gap year? Do you like to see them?
I actually do have an opinion of a gap year, and I think it's based on my own lived experience 30 years ago. I was probably a very typical pre-med student. I majored in biochemistry, cell biology.
Type A?
Right. Type A, right? And what I didn't know at the time, I was a political science minor. And I thought at the time, what I was told was that to be a doctor, you had to be a science major. We now know that's not true. And I think I perhaps would have flipped my majors and minors and do it differently. Sure. But suffice it to say, I was one of those very linear people, right? So I went from college directly to med school. So I now say to applicants, and I truly believe this, and had I known what I know now then, I would have done a gap year. I think I would have benefited tremendously from it. So I've always said to students who've asked, should I do a gap year? And I kind of explore that a bit more with them in terms of what they hope to do during that year, etc. But I'm a huge fan of a gap year. I really am. And my perspective may be biased, but I feel like I entered medical school really tired. I think if anyone has that opportunity, I typically will encourage them to do it. It's a great year to reflect too.
Reflect, get some experience, get some perspective.
Absolutely.
And with the changes in the MCAT, it's I think harder than ever to get the prerequisites in time to take the MCAT and get the score back so that it's just harder and harder to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
At one point in the conversation, the mother asked me, if it was your daughter, what would you tell her?
Right.
And I was thinking to myself, if it was my daughter, I'd tell her to take a chill pill, but I couldn't say that on the phone. So I said, I would tell her to take a gap year.
Yeah. And I'll be frank. I would too. I have a daughter in law school. She toyed with the idea of a gap year. She made the choice not to. And she's happy and doing fine, but she thought about it. We talked about it, and that would have been good too, had she made that choice. So
Agreed. What about those planning to apply in future years? Let's say they're 2 or 3 years away. They're not this summer, but the summer of 2020 or later. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should by then have the building open, and so I'm hopeful that we will be able to begin to give tours to them. I would encourage them, if they're interested in us as a school, to contact us, reach out. We are really hoping, and we are getting lots of students reaching out, but just getting a sense of who we are. By the time they apply, there would have been 1 or 2 cohorts here. And so once our students arrive, we have an expectation, and I'm sure they will too, that they will be a lot more active and engaged with us and outreaching to students. So I think as much as students can make their interests known to us, and coming out and seeing the building through our admission space, we're hoping to also have times where we're meeting with pre-meds and conducting pre-med sessions. So, they stay in touch with us. Aside from continuing to do well in school, we do want them to be engaged with us. We really do.
Great, great advice.
Yeah.
What would you have liked me to ask that I haven't asked? Last question.
Geez, I feel like we have gone through quite a bit in terms of
you've been wonderful.
About the secondary.
Yeah.
It's been great. So I feel that, you know, we covered a lot of ground. The one thing I would encourage our, you know, pre-med students to do, our listeners to do is, you know, go to our website. You know, we definitely want students to really navigate that. There are a number of videos on there that, you know, folks from the leadership team have put together. And I think it really nicely describes a lot of our different spaces. This was great. I'm happy that we had an opportunity to connect and speak about our school. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you so much for joining me. I think it's been fascinating. I really enjoyed talking to you and learning about the Kaiser Permanente School of Medicine and the program that it is opening in 2020.
Likewise.
I'm sure you've piqued the listeners' interest. Where can they learn more about the KP Medical School? What's the URL?
Yeah, so if our students go to medschool.kp.org, they will find lots and lots of information there. We're excited about that. Yes.
And it is a good website. I agree with you. I was going through it
before the call.
So, listener, you'll find links to the Kaiser Permanente School of Medicine as well as related resources and podcasts in the show notes at exhibit.com/307. Quick reminder, Exhibit's med school admission services are 10% off through tomorrow, April 17th, 2019. Go to exhibit.com/medical/services, choose a service that's right for you, and enter coupon code START now to save while accessing experienced mentoring and guidance for any med school application. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 30th episode. If you found this show helpful, subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever podcatcher you prefer. So don't miss anything and subscribe. You can find subscribe links at exhibit.com/307. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Exhibit, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.